Welcome to the Artist Academy podcast, a place where we focus on the business side of art to help you attract more customers, increase profits, and ultimately live a life of creativity and financial freedom. I'm your host, Andrea Earhart, and this week's episode features sculptor slash ceramicist, Kurt Hammerly. Kurt has sold and shipped over 5,000 pieces of work in this past year at about $100 a pop. You do the math, but this dude has the credibility to be giving us all advice on growing a social media following and making sales. With over 350,000 followers on Instagram, it's best to listen when he gives tips on audience growth. And lucky for you, he gives plenty of no bullshit advice on our hour-long convo. He also drops the F-bomb several times, which I actually appreciate because things like that just help the conversation to not be so stiff. And sometimes with gallery artists, they can be. So I really appreciate his nonchalant manner and just to the point. And he's basically just putting an emphasis on his point. But if you have little ears nearby, then maybe just use headphones. Kurt sheds some light on the idea that not everyone who has the artistic eye should be a full-time artist. I love the honesty and his perspective with this. He has some reasoning behind it, which you'll hear shortly, but he's right. You know, with making art for a living comes so many other things like marketing or social media or whatever you have to do to sell the art you create. And if those things are continually giving you a major headache, then maybe taking on a quote, real job is best for some people anyway. But listen to this week's episode to hear his points and see if they actually apply to you, and or if there's something else that you could be doing that maybe doesn't give you as much of a headache. But I think you'll like Kurt's very real advice on what it takes to create for a living and grow your creative business to new heights. Hello, I am so excited to talk to you, like I was saying, because I usually interview painters, but you are not a painter. You create art in your own way. So just have I'll let you tell us what you do.
I paint, but I also make the canvases and the paint. So I guess in a way, but not really. My name is Kurt Hammerly. I am a ceramic artist. I've been doing it full time for about 5 years now. Started out of my basement with a full time job. Took my first pottery class after I got hit by a car and broke my neck. It's been a wild little adventure.
Wow. Okay. I love hearing those stories. Not that you had an injury, but there was this pivotal moment.
That's the only reason that we're here right now is because I'd never taken a pottery class in my life outside of high school, middle school, but never took it seriously. And then when I was 25 years old, I got hit by a car and I broke my neck and a bunch of other stuff. And then after I healed from that, I took a local pottery class and never intended to take another one, but got a little bit addicted and ended up taking about 6 to 8 classes. I don't even remember. And then became an apprentice at the studio and then built a studio in my basement. And now we're in a studio outside my house.
Oh my gosh. I bet you were one of those just annoying people that was automatically good at throwing on the wheel the first time.
Oh, you know, what's funny about that? I had a bunch of people upset at me because I made this teapot my first night ever.
Shut up.
And I was still in a neck brace. So they had to put a mirror in front of me and I had to look in the mirror because I couldn't tilt my head down. And I made this teapot and there was a bunch of people in the class that were really mad at me.
Yeah. I've thrown on a wheel a couple of times and in college and it's tough. So when I see works like you have, they're so colorful. I'm looking at them right now. And that's, I think you came up as a suggested video on Instagram, maybe on Reels or whatnot. And I was like, okay.
So we're always hoping for Instagram to share our stuff widely.
Yeah, you have over 350,000 followers. Is that mostly from Reels? And is that where you get most of your customers?
So yes, it's mostly from Reels, but it was from video before Reels were even a thing. It's so funny, when Reels came out, there were so many people that were like, oh, it's not a picture platform anymore, it's video. And I'm like, no, it's always fucking been video since the minute that they let you put a video on there. In the first 6 months to a year that I was on Instagram, I gained 200 followers from pictures. And then I put up my first video and doubled that and then just kept making videos. Back when I had to film on a DSLR, put it on my computer, edit it in Premiere, re-export it back to my phone and then upload it. It was so much work and the aspect ratio was a square. Not to sound super old or anything, but video used to be really tedious and time consuming, but it's what did it. I've grown by about 50,000 followers a year since I started. And yeah, it's all video. And that's all of my customers come from Instagram. So
I love that. Yeah, I could just geek out with you on video equipment. I remember using the GoPro back in the day that had no stability control for my travel videos that just, I look back and I'm like, oh gosh. Like,
oh man. Times have changed. Every single reel that I make now is filmed with my phone. Every picture that I post is from my phone. The only thing I ever use my now Sony mirrorless cameras for is when I'm taking like 1,000 pictures for product photography, just so I can batch edit in Lightroom, and it's just easier than a phone in that case. But everything else is, the phone is king these days.
So true. Yeah. Do you have what phone do you have specifically? And then what do you use to edit?
I just got a 15 Pro Max. I've always been a tech nerd as I sit next to my computer that I built myself and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, I was on a 13 Pro Max for a while and was like, I can't imagine the 15's that much better. And it is significantly better. I'm amazed that they keep being able to make leaps with that. And then I just edit all my reels natively through Instagram. I have found in my experience of doing this for 8 years that the more effort you put into your content, the worse it does. So like the videos that I filmed on my mirrorless cameras and taken into Premiere and spent hours editing and put all this time into storyboarding it and all of this, they just flop. And then the videos that I, like, my brain just tells me, hey, this thing that you're doing, you should film it. I film it 2 or 3 different angles, edit it for 2.5 minutes, write a very simple description. Those are the ones that get 1 million or 10 million views. And you're like, what the hell? But at least that's my experience, is the more effort I put into content, the worse it does.
I'm going to do like a voiceover and do this thing. And then it just gets little to no anything. And then
yeah. It's such a crazy concept. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
And I talked to so many new people who are just like, I put so much work into this. And they put in their story, they're like, please, this video, I put so much effort into it. And it's, nope, that's not how it works. It doesn't work that way. Just make videos and put them up and make videos and put them up and make videos and put them up. And some percentage of those will do well, provided you're actually making videos that at least tickle people's brain in some way and they watch it for more than 1.5 seconds.
Visually pleasing. Do you put any time into getting a hook in it or anything?
This is going to sound really silly, but I try to just let my subconscious take the wheel. After so many years of doing this and so many years of, I like to be very active on Instagram and watch other people's videos in different art forms and different mediums. And like the ones that I actually see that I'm like, damn, that was cool, I'll save it and just watch it over and over again and be like, why is this so cool? And try to really analyze other people's content and then try to recreate it as best I can. And then when I edit mine, I watch it a bunch of times. And if I'm sitting there, wow, this is boring as shit, then most other people probably will as well. Just trying to, video game has changed so dramatically over the years. Back in the day, you could just throw Hyperlapse on anything and it would do amazingly well. And now Hyperlapse videos are trash.
Yeah.
No one wants to see that shit anymore. And it's all, and at least in my experience and what I'm doing, it's more about very shortcuts of real-time work from different angles to just show enough of the process that people get the gist, but you don't have to show the whole process. Like, people have been watching stuff. It used to be so easy. No one had seen anyone throw on a pottery wheel before. So if you threw on a pottery wheel, it was like, oh my God, that is so cool. And now people are like, no one cares. We've seen this for years, hundreds of videos a week for years of people throwing on wheels. So yeah, I just try to document the work that I'm actually doing and hope that I can edit it and present it in a way that entertains people in some small capacity.
So true. I saw somebody say recently that the new fad that's happening on another platform that will soon trickle to Instagram is when you have the split video. So like the vertical video, and on the bottom, it's like a time lapse or your creation of process. But on the top, you're talking about creating it or something like that. I've been wanting to try out a couple of those there. I don't know.
That works a lot better for beautiful people, in my opinion. There's definitely this level of like, how much of my face should I actually be showing? There's a sliding scale.
You're like, my hands though. My hands are sexy. And so I can just show people.
No, the hands are not sexy. The process might be a little sexy, but I'm like, As far as Instagram goes, I'm old as dirt ever.
Oh, the age thing. Okay.
I don't need to be selling myself as long as my work does well.
Okay. I gotcha. I like to think that people like to see the artist with the art, but sometimes they just want to see, I want to see your...
So I definitely think that there's something to that. I think it's less about my face and I use my stories in a way. I believe that using your reels and your pictures as a way to present your work and your process to the world is good. But I think there's an extra layer to it that helps develop a following that lasts for years and years. And that's where I use my stories and I share my plants and I share my cooking and I share my family and I share all of these other aspects of my life where the people that have been following me all the way back from when I was in my basement or even before that, there is this level where they want to see the artist, but it's more I'm trying to endear them to my life and the other things that I'm doing rather than like me as a, like my looks or anything like that. The influencer game for being a beautiful person on Instagram is one thing, but it doesn't have to work that way. People seemingly love to see the cooking that I do, and I have about 100 houses that I share and stuff like that.
Cool. Oh, I could talk houseplant with you. I like the bohemian look, so I've just started adding little plant beauties. I have a giant monstera that I'm pretty proud of. Do you have a couple that you're proud of?
Yeah, I have 3 monsteras. We got a new house last February, and now I have this like crazy third car garage that's attached to the house, but it's separated by a wall. They were using it for a swim spa before, so it's really well insulated. It has great light, and now all my plants are out there. I had to bring some of them inside because it's 80% humidity in that room now, and my cacti were dying, but I have a willow leaf ficus bonsai that I've had since sophomore year of high school. So it's about 19 years old. Survived when I was in the dorms in college and all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah.
I remember my college roommate gave her plant a vitamin pill. Like we take vitamin. She just stuck it in the dirt. She's like, it's got to be good for it. Watered it and it died. It died.
Oh, man. I wonder if it was the acidity in the pill or the salt content just obliterated the plant. Who knows?
Smelled really bad. We were like, what is
that? So anyway, I use my feed content for my work and I use my story content for more behind the scenes development that's not as sexy for mainstream content and for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Cool. So can you talk to me a little bit about your art process? So you throw on the wheel and then you fire it.
So I don't
blaze it. What?
No. My process changed very early. When I first started, I was throwing on the wheel. I had this technique of making pots that looked like bark texture when I first started out, and that was what got me my start. But then I went to architecture and design school, and then I worked for the university running their fabrication lab, laser cutters, 3D printers, CNC machines, all of that stuff. So yeah, so all of that stuff that you see on my feed now and my website and whatever, all of that is molded. And I have a process. I'm actually, as we speak, my 3D printers are running in the garage printing new molds for this year. So I design all of my work in a program called Rhino on the computer that I learned in architecture school. Then I design the molds. And like right now, just recently, I've been doing development on new handle designs. So these two handles are 3D printed resin. And I've printed them just to get like the size and the feel and make sure that everything is the way I want it. And then actually the mold parts for that handle are printing on my resin printers as we speak. Then when that's done, I will cast those mold parts in polyurethane, then cast those polyurethane mother molds in plaster, and then cast finally those plaster production molds in porcelain, and then fire them the first time. Glaze them in the glazes that I make and then fire them a second time. So it's a very long process.
Wow. I am stuck in the past thinking that you have to throw on the wheel everything.
Oh, no. Yeah. So this is one of the things that has helped me. Like I talked about how throwing on the wheel isn't sexy enough to make content with anymore, but there aren't too many people doing what I'm doing. So I found ways to, that's one of the easiest ways to grow on social media is to have something that's not super common. I've been throwing on the wheel for the last 2 weeks just for fun, making planters for my plants. but I don't do it. I don't sell any wheel thrown work, and I haven't for probably 3.5 years now.
So crazy cool. Okay, what's your best seller? Because I happen to fancy those cups that have the...
Coffee mugs.
Coffee mugs
are the bread and butter. This last year, I developed a glaze combination that we call Dragon's Blood. It's the kind of deep teal with the deep purple on top, and it runs over the textures and exposes the color underneath. And we sold a crazy amount of that last year. But I would say probably 60 to 70% of revenue is from coffee mugs, and then planters and bowls after that, and then everything else that I make, and the online workshops that I have, and some contract work that I do, and stuff like that.
Very cool. Okay, so then you're shipping all of these out yourself?
Yeah, so I have 2 employees right now. I had 6 last year, and then last summer, some projects that we had. I was making ashtrays for Seth Rogen's weed company. Scaled up for them, and then that stopped going so well, so we're no longer working with them. And now it's me, and my brother works for me about 3 days a week, and then I have a full-time employee named Haley. And my brother, Greg, does most of the shipping infrastructure stuff. So yeah, so we take in bags of dry powdered clay in the back of our studio, and we ship direct to customer out the front and do everything in-house.
Cool. All right. What does Haley do?
Haley does most of the slip casting, which is actually like filling the molds with clay, pouring them out, trimming them up, cleaning them up for firing. She makes, so I have all my glaze recipes saved, and I'll say, hey, we need a batch of the grape jelly glaze, and print her out a little sheet, and she'll make the glazes. She's worked for me for about 2 years now, 2.5 years or so. And then she, during the holidays, she helped Greg with the shipping, because we, between November 1st and December 31st, we made, sold, and shipped 2,300 pieces. And about 1,700 orders, and got it all out the door before December 17th, last ship day, and then took a break.
A well-deserved break. Okay, so are you filtering people to your website where they order? Do you run any kind of discounts, or what's your marketing strategy and process?
My marketing strategy, I'm fortunate that the demand has always been higher than I'm able to fulfill. So yeah, we don't do discounts. I've never offered a discount. We did some, I guess the only discount we ever offered was free shipping for the very last week of the year, and that's it. But other than that, I use Instagram as a tool to share my artistic development and my artistic process. And I say, if you want something, you can go to the website. We run pre-orders, and we have some static things that stay on the website at all times until they're sold out, and then do monthly or bi-monthly launches of individually numbered pieces, usually between 200 and 400 pieces will get put up on the website. Each one has a number, each one has 4 pictures, and I have dozens and dozens of different glazes, and I have tons of different textures and sizes and all of that stuff. And it's just make a bunch of stuff and then put it on the website and send an email out to the email list, make a couple of posts leading up to it, show. One of the biggest things that I've ever done is showing the kiln firings. I have a front-loading kiln, so I can show before and after pictures. And that's probably the most popular thing that I do in my stories, is because they go in looking gray or brown and boring. And as soon as we open that door after it's fired, they all pop with any color you can imagine. So yeah, I just try to consistently grow not only my following, but my email list. And then whenever I have work available, I let my following know through Instagram, through email. And we say on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time, the January 2024 collection drop, and then yeah, at 8 p.m. it drops, and we sell a couple hundred things, and then spend a couple days packing it up, and then start over again.
Oh, that's so much more organized than rather than somebody just placing an order for something random. Like you've made all the things before you go to ship them, before people actually order.
For the most part, we actually two and a half, 3 years ago, we started dipping a toe into pre-orders. So I'll have a glaze of the month. It'll be on 6 of my different pieces. And we'll say, hey, this glaze of the month is going to run for the month. And I found it. So what was happening is before I got this studio, before I hired my brother, I was making about 80 pieces a month and they were selling out in the first couple seconds that they launched. And 99.9% of the time, the website had nothing on it. And people were like, my wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, son, daughter, whatever, have been asking for one of your pieces. And I go to your website and there's nothing there. So we started offering pre-orders and what we call the signature collection. And it's just to have something on the website to capture those people that don't want to play the hype drop bullshit. There are like a lot of people that are like, I don't want to play that game. Just sell me something. So we've diversified. Probably half of revenue last year was from pre-orders and half was from those number drops. And obviously the pre-orders aren't as diverse, whereas the 300 pieces that we drop in the numbered collection, there's probably two of each that are the same. And then everything, like there are only two of each. And it's not that people are going to the website to buy a piece. They are going to the website to buy that piece. Because we run what we call a preview for 3 days leading up to the sale. And people can go and see every single piece in full detail with a number on it. And then they can say, I want number 63 and 125. And then on that Wednesday, when everything drops at 8 p.m., they type in those numbers and they try to buy the ones that they want. And yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just experimenting, figuring out what works and what isn't too, gives you too much of a headache.
Yeah, and we've done that. We've done that 5 years now and it just keeps growing.
Do you have any idea what your numbers were for like December and November? Like gross?
I don't know how much of that I want to share. It's so hard. So like we have in the ceramics world, people do these year-end recaps and they share their expenses and all of this stuff. It's so hard to frame it. Like I said, I'll just say we sold about 5,000 pieces last year, maybe closer to 6,000.
And each one sells for about how much?
About $100.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I personally took home about four times as much as my salary when I worked for the university.
Cool. Love it.
It's hard to share the numbers once you start getting bigger as people don't have the context for it, especially because we paid almost $40,000 in rent last year. I have two employees. We paid $12,000 in utilities. As you scale up, these numbers start to get to the point where people don't have you just see the top end revenue and they're like, oh my God. And you're like, it's not like that. It's really not. It's great. And it's grown and I'm glad that it has because I worked at the university. It was a 40-hour week job. It was easy. And now I work all the time, especially through the holiday season. It was just constant. But I have some pretty big goals in the next couple years that this will all fund.
Like what?
Okay. So I was in my basement and then we moved to this facility that we're in now. It's 1,400 square feet. I guess I can gloss over. We got a second unit when we were working with Seth Rogen, scaled up. We have since scaled back and I had to let some people go, unfortunately, because that stopped happening. But right now I have 1,400 square foot studio and the plan has always been that this will be studio two and studio three will be back at my house. So last February, March, my wife and I bought the house that I'm in right now, and it's on an acre, and we have started the planning process, and hopefully this summer we will be breaking ground to build an 800 square foot studio with a 400 square foot greenhouse attached, and that will be hopefully next year this time. I will be moving out of my current rental into the home studio, and then I will become this pottery hermit that hangs out with my plants and hangs out with my pottery and cooks and doesn't leave my property very often.
Living the dream, but you created your own business and are growing it. And that's just so cool. That's so cool.
And then because that'll dramatically reduce overhead, my plan, since this is all about the business, the plan is to slowly and eventually raise prices about 20%. Reduce production by 50%. So I'm making 50% less stuff for a little bit higher price. And that will free up way more time for what I actually care about, which is the R&D, the development, the all of that. I didn't get into this to just make thousands of mugs every year. I have a lot of other things that I want to do. I want to try my hand more at a kind of, at some finer artwork, some bigger sculptural pieces. Everything that I do now, the mold making, the glaze making, the firing, all of the things that I'm doing now lend to that experience and knowledge base that will help me in what I want to do in the future. But the selling a $10,000 sculpture is a lot different than selling $100 mugs. I have no illusions that I can actually do that, but it would be fun to try. I have some ideas that will take hundreds and hundreds of hours of development with no guarantee of payoff. And right now I have a 2-year-old and my wife isn't working and this massive rent on the studio. So right now it's all about making enough money to get the new studio built, waiting until my son goes to school and my wife gets back to work and like actually getting back to a more sustainable lifestyle that's not just about trying to make as much money as possible. Sure. But building the studio is going to be quite pricey. Right now the name of the game is make as many mugs as people want to buy at the highest quality we possibly can. Yeah,
I have no doubt that you can sell a $10,000 sculpture. If I can sell a $10,000 mural, you can do a sculpture for sure.
I'll have to, once a year from now, I'll have to reach out and talk to you about it because it seems like such a different way of working. I've been selling functional wear for so long. They're selling actual, more just decorative art. Yeah, it's just a different game that I have no experience in. And right now I just can't afford to spend the time to get there.
Yeah, I feel you.
So yeah, be in my own studio by the time I'm not. And then I can just fuck around with art for the rest of my life.
Yep, exactly. I love talking to you about this because it's like, you would think that where you are right now, that's where a lot of people want to be. And so, oh, you've made it. And you're like, no, I have these bigger goals too. And so that's when people talk to me as well. I'm like, but I want to do this too. And it's, as you grow, they just get bigger. And it's not necessarily about.
But not only, they definitely get bigger, but it's also, they get different.
Yep.
Because like when you're first starting out and your goal is to find a way to make a living with it.
Yeah.
And that is a very specific goal. And that goal is very money centric. And then it's so hard to explain to anyone that hasn't gone through the same things that you're going through, which is why podcasts and things like this are great to try to explain it. But I made 5,000 pots last year. The year before that, I made 7,000. And this is not sustainable. I am exhausted. And I still go a little bit crazy every now and then. So every single one of my designs, except two, got retired a few weeks ago. And now I'm frantically trying to make enough molds. I have tons of ideas. It's just, what level of research and development can my business before I'm not making enough money to keep going? Like, I constantly want to get better and make newer stuff and newer designs and all of these things. But like a new mold system is a couple $100 and a couple dozen hours of my time between the computer designing, 3D modeling, the printing, the mold making, all of this. And it's, I can't just constantly throw them all away and start over. Mm-hmm. So I try to reel it in. I only planned on getting rid of like half of my designs this year. And then the end of the year came and I was like, I'm bored. I'm going to get rid of the rest and start over. And like right now I don't have much for Haley to do. And she's so, what are we doing? And I'm like, I'm trying to make the molds as fast as possible. But I feel like I'm just a crazy person because yeah, I could probably ride off of my current designs for another year, but it makes me want to throw up to think about because I'm already just over them in my head and I want to move on to better stuff.
Yep, that boredom. Yeah. So I teach the business of art to specifically muralists who want to get started. And I'm finding since it's been 10 years since I started, like I'm getting a little bored of talking about the beginnings. And I'm like, what really interests me is talking to people like you about hiring and getting that next level of working just a little bit smarter and not just doing the rat race thing of what does that next level look like?
That was really what pushed me out of working for the university is I was teaching the basic fabrication and 3D modeling to new students every year. And after 10 years, the new students would come in and think that I'm some kind of genius wizard. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Every year, new 18-year-olds ask the same questions over and over again. And I just felt, holy shit, am I going to actually sit here until I'm retirement age and not, like, I'm just going to be teaching basic shit over and over again. I was so bored in that job. And now it's just, there's new shit all the time. It's fantastic. It never ends.
The numbers are bigger. The problems are slightly bigger too. Oh, okay. but then the payout is...
Oh, the problems are way bigger. If this was only as profitable as the income from my job at the university, I don't know if I would do it. I'd probably keep it as a side hustle or something because, yeah, the amount of stuff... I'm terrified for this year. My brother, who works for me, also just got licensed as a general contractor. So he's going to be the general contractor for the studio build. And we're talking through and trying to figure out all these things. And it's, are the utilities, the gas, electrical, sewer, and water going to cost $45,000 just for the utilities or more? It could be more. We don't even know. We're still figuring that out. And it's just, we've saved up as aggressively as possible to make this. I'm wearing like a $2 t-shirt right now. And I made more money last year than I ever would have at my old job. But it's because every spare dollar just goes into an account to build the studio. So yeah, it's going to be a crazy year of new problems as we start building this building.
Yeah. You just would never know looking at your Instagram about this. It's, oh, he makes cups. How cool. And then it's, oh no, there's so much back end to your business. That's mass production and building at a higher level.
Yeah. And this is the stuff that I focus on in my story. I think I story almost every, I probably storied like 320, 340 days last year. Wow. The new broadcast channels, I actually love that. I think it's fantastic. That's where I can put stuff that's more after we're done here. I think I have some stuff that's going into that of the new mold development stuff. And that's where I really try to just hit this touch point of, because everyone that follows you has opted into what you're doing, but the people that will actually go to that broadcast channel, they're the ones that have really opted in and they are really interested. So I just view it as different levels of personalized content for people that are interested at different levels. Because the vast majority of people just want to see the pretty cups. But then there's that smaller percentage of people that want to see the personal life stuff. There's that smaller percentage of people that want to hear about the business development. Like I have, one of the things I'm sure that was when you first get started on social media, the easiest followers to get are other people in your art form. And I have really made a ton of friends in the ceramics world and I follow them. They follow me. They're interested in the business side. They're interested in the glaze chemistry side that's super boring to other people. So just trying to figure out how to segment your content in a way where the mass of your audience isn't seeing a reel that's about business numbers. In my case, if that's what your account is about, then that's great. But a lot of my followers would be like, where the fuck are the cups? Show us the cups, man. It's just, yeah, there is this larger narrative that you only get if you follow through the stories and through the broadcast channel and stuff like that.
I just started a broadcast channel. Actually, for art business tips. And I put it on their business. You don't want to hear business. I don't want to.
Yeah. And that's the great thing is that you have your audience that follows you already. And then you're giving people, you're telling people what to expect if they choose to opt into this. And that's a great thing because I'm not trying to bore anyone with stuff that they don't want to see. But if there is a segment of my following that wants to see more on a specific topic, then I'm more than happy to deliver it in whatever format.
Cool. You have a very cool format. This is so unique and insightful. So thank you for sharing. So I guess one more question and I'll let you get back to your busy day. But what is some advice that you would give artists that want to do what you're doing? Maybe more on the getting started level, because that's typically what people listen to this podcast for, is how to get started and make a living as an artist. But what's your best business piece of advice?
I'm not in a hurry, by the way, so we can talk about this a little more, but it's very interesting. I've given seminars and talks on getting started as an artist specifically for art and social media. And I think some of the interesting stuff that people run into is they're like, oh, I'm an artist and I want to sell my work, but my art's not good enough to start an Instagram. When my art is better, then I'll start an Instagram. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Social media is a skill, just like developing your art. So you need to be starting working on social media as early as possible because you're going to be bad at it for a while. And it takes a while to get better. And it takes a while to hit your stride and understand your audience and understand your messaging and stuff like that. And then the other thing Man, it's so interesting. I talk to so many people that hate Instagram. They're like, I want to be an artist for a living, but I hate Instagram. And I'm like, what? Why? And they're like, oh, man, it just hates me and blah, 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 blah. And it's, you have this like almost toxic relationship with social media where I think that, especially when you're getting started, you need to understand that TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, whatever social media you choose to use, YouTube, you're playing in someone else's game. You don't get to pick the rules. They make the rules and you work within those rules. And there's nothing you can do to change that. There's no amount of crying about adding chronological feedback is going to actually make them do what you want. So you have to constantly work within the rules of these systems. And it's really annoying because they do not share what the rules are and they're constantly changing. So as someone who uses social media for marketing for a living, you have to be constantly willing to learn and get better. Like we were talking about earlier, the way that videos were made was different 5 years ago than it is now. It was different 2 years ago than it is now. So you're constantly having to learn new stuff. So why not try to have a better relationship with social media and actually make content that you personally would find interesting? It's so crazy to hear people complain about the algorithm. And I'm like, well, do you follow artists? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, are there some that do a really good job? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, then fucking copy them. Just do what they do. And eventually, like, not copying their art, obviously, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying copying their content style. If you see an artist in your same art form that makes a reel that does super well, and you're watching that reel and you're like, wow, this is really entertaining, go back and recreate that exact same reel. And through this repetitive process and trying to have a more positive, healthy relationship with social media, you'll get better at it and maybe, hopefully, even enjoy it a little along the way. Because I've never met anyone that is super successful with social media that absolutely hates it. Because why on earth would you want to get better at something that you hate?
So true. I went to this event recently by Sony. And so it was a lot of tech people. And I just got to talk to a lot of influencers and nobody complained about the algorithm because it was all of our jobs to do it. And we were talking about what's working and just we were having fun being creative with the cameras and making videos. But nobody there was talking about how much they hated the algorithm. And it was so refreshing to talk to people who do this professionally and take it seriously and actually like it. I like it.
Yep. And I was so insulated early on that I didn't even realize that a lot of this existed. When I was in my basement alone, I had a small group of friends that were also potters, and we would either video chat or chat all day long, and we would talk about what worked well for us recently in a video or a picture or a caption, or back then talking more about hashtags. And it was just like, it was more, I don't know, I meet so many artists, whether they're good or not, that one, hate the business side of things. And that's going to make your life really hard. If you have a negative, toxic relationship with business, like, I'm sorry, but if you want to make a living as an artist, then it has to be a business. You can't just be an artist. You can. There's like this 0.00001% of artists are so good and so prolific that people are coming to them and saying, hey, let me sell your shit in my gallery. And it's actually like a real gallery and they're making tons of money. There are those artists that are making absolute obscene amounts of money. And all they're expected to do in their lives is create the art and then other people take care of everything else. But expecting you to be that person is obscene. And just, it's so crazy. Yeah, if you want to make a living as an artist in this day and age, you got to wear a lot of hats. But if you wanted to back in the day, you also had to wear a lot of hats. You were like running around to art fairs and stuff like that. So it's just interesting to hear what people complain about. But if you don't enjoy these things, then maybe it's not for you. I give a talk at the yearly pottery convention in front of a couple hundred people. And at the time, this was like 3 or 4 years ago, at the time, I truly believed that anyone should do this. Everyone that wants to be an artist should try. Everyone that is an artist should try to make a living at it full time. And now I don't believe that anymore. It's a weird thing to say, but there are a lot of people, the vast majority, in my opinion, that should keep this to a side thing. They should make art for fun, maybe sell it just to get rid of it and have a little extra spending money. But the vast majority of people are not going to enjoy being an artist for a living.
Yeah,
And it's interesting. I was talking to someone recently saying that they wanted to quit their job and do art for a living. And they hadn't even started. They were like, I want to be a potter for a living. I'm going to quit my job and chase my dream. And I was like, have you taken any classes? And they're like, one. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, you need to understand that there are a lot of parts of this that suck. And they were like, what are you talking about? What parts of this could suck? You get to make art for a living. And I'm like, oh, sweet child. So you're so naive because yeah, this is, it's more business than art, at least the way I do it. And I feel very fortunate in the fact that I actually enjoy learning the business side. I enjoy the marketing side. I enjoy the social media. I enjoy everything to a point. It all gets exhausting at some point, but I don't outright hate any part of it, except sales tax. Sales tax is fucking terrible.
I love how just to the point, you're like, maybe you shouldn't be an artist if you're complaining about it every day. Why put your back?
You should be an artist, but you should not be an artist for a living. Yeah, keep it for fun. Like, there were two main reasons that I quit my job. I did this the safest way possible. I worked a full-time job until 2 months in a row, I made as much as my salary. Then I went down to part-time. And then that year, I fully replaced my salary at my career. Only then I left. But I left because my job didn't have any advancement. Like right now, I have a toddler and my wife isn't working. And if I was still at the university, we would be in a very scary financial situation, I feel like. That would have been very hard. And I could have stayed at that easy, cushy job for the next 20 years and retired and done my art the entire time on the side. But I wanted more development time. I wanted to get better at my work faster. And quitting my job has allowed me to do that. The amount of progress that I've made, every capacity of how good and how much I like my art has gone up exponentially since I quit my job because I have way more time to do it. But there's a lot of people that don't want to do art for 60 hours a week. Like, do it in the evenings. Whatever your art form is, if it's painting or jewelry, do it a couple evenings a week, do it during the day on a weekend day, something like that. If that fulfills you, don't listen to all of the people in your life that are like, oh my God, you should do this for a living. And a lot of those people don't have any idea what it means to do this. So I'm ranting now, but
no, yeah, I totally feel you.
This is very important to me. In the years that I've been on Instagram, we've gone through this insane boom of artists that have risen up and are making tons of money and are making a living. And in the last 2 years, especially post-COVID, I've seen a lot of people either get horrifyingly burnt out and just collapse completely because of that, or they're just like, I don't want to play the social media game anymore. I don't want to do production at this level anymore. And it's just, it's not for everyone. And that's okay. You can do art in any capacity you want. And doing it for a living and making tons of money doesn't make you any more of an artist than anyone else. So what I'd say to people getting started, back to your initial question, is don't be in too much of a hurry. Don't just do it for the money, because without the passion, you're not going to be able to sustain your effort to make the money, because there's a lot of this that sucks.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm ranting, but it's just, art doesn't have to be this thing that you turn into a business.
Yeah.
You can, not as great as it looks online sometimes. It's great, but it's not everything.
Yeah. I love this job way more than any other job, but I also really like creating video and I like posting to Instagram. So there's not a ton of like parts to this business where I'm like, oh, I have to do this. I genuinely like it. So maybe find the thing that you like, meaning like talking to the listeners here. If social media is not your thing, maybe go in person to show something.
I know people that thrive on sitting there for days on end talking to new people. And that's great. I don't want to do it. Sitting in front of all my art and just talking to people for 12 hours straight. Oh my God, that is like actually my nightmare. Selling online works great for me because making reels, especially lately, I've made a couple of reels that right when I posted, I'm giddy again. And I'm like, oh, that was so fun to make that video and to show this part of my process.
Yeah.
So yeah, I completely agree with you. Find the things that you enjoy, or at least try to psychologically manipulate yourself to think that you enjoy some of these things more than you do, and maybe fake it till you make it, and maybe you'll find a passion for video production. Do you dive into it?
I think making a video is just another creative thing too. Like I make a painting, yeah. I make a video. Those are both super creative things.
But they're separate art forms.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, it's hard to explain to people.
Yeah. And I sent it to my husband, this one that I just made, and it's out of the norm for me. And it's like really silly. And I was like, do you think I should post this? Or is it like too silly? And they're like, but it was fun making it because I would have a bunch of collaged videos with it. And I was like, it's just very different. I'm like, I'm going to post it afterwards. But it was fun.
I did one with a blowtorch and made a reel out of it. And it wasn't like my most successful reel ever, but it was my brother's idea. And then we executed on it. We were in the bathroom of the studio in the dark, roasting the marshmallow over one of the mugs with a blowtorch. And it was hilarious. And it was great. Like everyone that works in the studio had a fun time that day roasting marshmallows because we had to do multiple takes and all that. But yeah, I know people that are like, I don't even like taking pictures of my work. And I'm like, then you probably aren't cut out for this. When I was speaking at the convention a couple of years ago, this older woman afterwards raised her hand and she's like, don't have a smartphone and I've never taken a picture of my work in my life. Should I start an Instagram? And I was like, oh boy, you should if you're ready to commit to a lot of learning.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be hard, but if you feel up for that challenge, then you absolutely should. So it's just, it's interesting to try to find recommendations for people. I like what you said, find a way that works for you. There's a million ways to do this. I talk to people that sell 10 pieces a month for a very high price. I talk to people that sell thousands of pieces a month for a lower price, and people that sell in person, people that sell online, direct to customer, people that do exclusively wholesale, people that are the designers themselves, and then they outsource the production to someone else and they handle the social media. And it is amazing to me how many different business models artists have found, especially in the last couple of years. I'm doing very high paying contract work for a company. Sadly, I can't say who they are, but it's one of the craziest things I've ever done in my life and pays extremely well. It's only a couple hours a week, a couple hours a month, but that would be fun to do more of that. The Seth Rogen gig, we made 4,000 ashtrays for them in about 18 months. And it was one of the craziest things to do in my life. Like we had been selling direct to customer. So I making 1,000 ashtrays at a time, packing them up in someone else's packaging, and then putting them on pallets and watching $30,000 worth of pottery disappear at once was just like, oh my God, this is insane. There's just so many different ways to do it.
Have you ever made a piece that just flopped? Maybe like you went out there and did something, or maybe not recently, but tell me about that. Because I think a lot of people, myself included, like I paint some weird stuff sometimes. And I'm like, I don't know that everybody's going to like this. So I put it out and it does all right. But then it's, and then some hit where that I don't think that maybe it won't.
Yeah. Some of my favorite work ever is not marketable to my audience. They don't care. And a lot of the work that I'm like, oh, this is gross. I don't like it. My wife is, this is one of the best things you've ever made. And then I put it up at a double the normal price and it sells instantly. And I'm like, what the hell? I have no idea what I'm doing. But with my method of creating, there have been some flops where I'm self-taught in mold making. I am self-taught in especially like making molds from 3D prints. Like that was something that wasn't, there was no information on it when I got started. I'm not going to claim that I invented any part of the process, but it was something that I've just been tinkering with for years. And still to this day, there are molds where I'm looking at it on the screen in like a 3D modeling program. And I'm like, I have no idea if this is going to work. And then I go through the process of 3D printing the parts for $100, casting all the polyurethane or silicone for a couple $100 and spending dozens of hours of time. And the first time I pour porcelain into it, it doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, shit. And then that whole mold system and all the development is just, it's just done. So yeah, there have been some, but yeah, it's funny. It's not so much commercial failures because we have a way of scaling. Something's not popular, we just make less of it. But there was a moment a couple years ago during the holiday season where even one of my employees was talking to her mom and she was like, worried about Kurt. He's been failing a lot lately. But I think that's one of the interesting things about, especially clay as an art form, is like once you put it into the kiln, there's no going back. There's no adding more paint on the part that's screwed up. Like it's comes out of the kiln and you're like, shit. And it's just done forever. I don't know. I don't look at the failure the same way. I learn from all of it. And the massive amount of failure that I have incurred in the last couple of years has just made me better. I've blown through thousands of dollars of 3D printing resin that just went right into the trash because it wasn't what it was supposed to be. one of the kilns that was Seth Rogen's ashtrays. I had 100 of them in the kiln, glazed, ready to fire. Closed the door, hit the button, walked in the next morning, and every single piece of glaze had fallen off, all 100 pieces, and fused to the kiln shelves. And it was like, gotta redo all of that. So it's just, that's a really good question that you asked, because if you're going to be successful at something like this, there's going to be mountains and mountains of not only financial failure, but just wasted time, because we're all learning on our own, and learning is wasteful and expensive.
Yeah, especially in your line of work. So painters out there feel better that we're only wasting some paint and it's only like a maximum $100 with the paint and you can just paint over it. So listening to you do this, I'm like, okay, yeah.
Ceramics is so unforgiving. Something can go into the kiln and you're like, this is going to be the best thing I've ever made. And then the next morning you open the kiln and you're like, what just happened? You got to try to figure out what happened, or even mild failure. So we have in the front of our studio what we call the second shelf. So a normal mug of mine is about $100. And then the second shelf, slightly flawed, they're either warped or the glaze ran a little or any number of small things that could make it. So I try to keep my level of work really high. So we have hundreds and hundreds of pieces on the second shelf and we sell them for a dramatically lower price. But it's just like, yeah, so many things can go wrong. You can have a piece come out and be like, wow, this is the most beautiful piece I've ever made. And then look at it from the top and you're like, oh, it's an egg shape. That's wonderful. And throw it in the trash.
I want one that you completely messed up and you're like, that's not how it is. That's what I want. So do you have that? Do you have those offered for sale?
We sell them in person. I used to sell seconds online, but it's really hard to make it financially viable. So we do once a year. My following has got to this point where it's weird. When you have a bunch of Instagram followers, you never think of them as being near you.
Yeah.
But 3 years ago, we did our first second sale and we had about 400 pieces. We put them all out on the table. I put in my story and I sent out my email like, we're doing a local second sale. It's going to be locals only. It's 10 a.m. on the Saturday. And when we were getting ready, this line just started forming. And it was like, oh my God, what is happening? And when I opened the door at 11 a.m., there was like 180 to 100 people in line and just filled the studio. And we sold 400 seconds in like less than an hour. Or it took a little bit longer than an hour to check everyone out. And then the next year, we had to actually put a limit on how many pieces people could get, because we had people in the front of the line walking out with 25 pieces. And the people that were still waiting in line were like, what the fuck? I didn't get a single thing. So it's just, so we found it far easier to just liquidate all of the failures that are still, these are the failures that are still food safe and usable. We throw away plenty of other stuff that's not usable. But so yeah, even my colossal glaze failures and warping and all of that can still be used and food safe and all of that, but just I can never put it up for the normal price.
Yeah, I feel you. Like that. What I hear from that is you have 100 people waiting in line to buy your not so great stuff. Is do videos, people. Just do videos. So this is, you built the following on video.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So let's circle back to that. That is it. Make videos. Quit crying about how Instagram is not a photo thing anymore. Make videos. Just fucking make videos. It's so crazy to me that people just won't make videos. Like, I have a video right now that I made in November, and it is me dipping a bowl in glaze and pulling it out. And I did it in this way where I reversed the second half. So I dipped an unglazed piece in and then pulled out a fully glazed piece, but I reversed it so it looked like it just went in unfired, came out completely finished and fired, but it was just a magic of television thing. The video is at 12.7 million views, and I've got about 35,000 followers in the last 2 months from it. And it took me maybe 6 minutes to film and maybe 10 minutes to edit. And that 16 minutes of my life turned into 40,000 followers. In today's, so many people are like, oh, you can't grow on Instagram today. And it's like, yes, you absolutely can. You just have to make something that catches human attention in the right way. And yeah, like you said, just make videos. Just please.
Oh, man.
Just take a videography class. Watch some stuff on YouTube. But the easiest thing to do is what I think I've said twice already. Just watch other people's reels and then just shamelessly copy what they did in their reel
yeah.
for your art form.
like the canvas turnaround, like when all the painters, they just turn around with their canvas. You have me thinking, since you dip it down, what if I just put a canvas down and then like a blank canvas and then brought up like a completely done one? That's just, it's slightly different.
For all your years of experience, that video, that's the thing. It's hard to get started with video content, but at some point, I didn't plan that bowl video that I just told you about until I sat down and I was like, Jesus, I have 60 bowls to glaze today. And I got through the first 20 and I was like, there's a video here. There has to be a video here. This was not something that I agonized for days over trying to figure out a video. It was like, I was going through my normal day. And at some point, once you've made enough content, your brain goes, this is content. This is content. This is content. And you like just turn your, I have a tripod with a phone mount just in the studio for any single moment where I need to make a video, and I have a light. And the very last second before that video, I put a key light off on the side. And I think that it made the video quality just that much better that lended to that video being good. And it's just, it's all practice. Just make videos, copy other people's videos, just try some crazy shit. You never know what's going to actually tickle people's brains. And just don't get, yeah. And then as soon as you post it, don't even think about it. Don't worry about how it's doing. Just on to the next thing. It's fucking content. It doesn't last.
True. Yeah. People watch it for just a second and they're on to whatever else they're doing. And they will make another one.
And as the artist, you have to do that too, because like just sitting there and being sad because your post didn't do well, like what a waste of time. So make videos.
Get over yourself.
Just make videos. Good Lord. It's really not as bad as it seems.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. And I love this video thing because I've been preaching this for a lot. So it's just nice to have somebody that's
reinforced.
Yes. Yeah. And doing really well with it. So yeah, thank you so much. And I will continue to follow you and watch you grow by 50,000 followers a year. So if anybody's wanting some video ideas, follow Kurt and maybe you'll get some. Yeah.
And I stole them from someone else. So it's just a circle of life. But thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Artist Academy podcast. I've been putting out at least one episode per week for more than 4 years on this podcast, and it's really cool to see those download numbers go up and up as time goes on. And that's because artists like you listen and share these episodes. So really, when I say thank you, I mean it. It's really cool to see progress along the way. And anyway, if you like this type of art and business content, then I highly encourage you to get the audio version of my book, Mural Money, with over 15 hours of listening inspiration. I'm currently running a special of just $17 for the audio version. You can go to muralmoney.com to find it. And that comes with a bunch of extras like my art supply list, my pricing guide, recommended book and podcast list, and so much more. I filled that book with tips from my art journey of building a profitable mural career. Plus, I've included the best of the best advice from guests I've interviewed on this podcast. It's the most affordable all-in-one book of advice on art and business that I have. And if you enjoy listening to me here, then I know you'll like the book too, because I read it myself. All 15 hours of it. The book is available on Amazon and Audible normally for $25, but if you go to muralmoney.com, that is where you can grab the special $17 deal while it lasts. If you haven't listened to my book yet, this is your sign to do it. Again, normally $25, I'm running a special for $17, but you have to go to muralmoney.com. That's where you can grab the audio version of it. And that's all I have for you today. So I will see you next week for another episode of the Artist Academy podcast.